Welcome to Positive Talk Radio. Our goal is simple, to explore evolving ideas one conversation at a time. So stay with us, and right now we present. We've got a great author who is, hey, what do you know? She's got positive in her in the top of the book right there. It says positively altered. We get to talk to Dr. Cindy Howard today, and we're going to talk about her book and how she manages to keep a positive attitude given all the messy stuff we go through in life, which is life, death, and everything else that is involved with it. And I'm looking forward to this conversation. I think we're going to have a great time. Dr. Cindy, how are you today?
Kevin, I am fantastic. How are you doing?
I'm fantastic too. I guess we've solved all the world's problems because we're both so fantastic.
You know what? And even if they're not solved, it's a state of mind. So it's perfect.
Exactly. And you're also a speaker and you like to go on and talk to, when you talk to an audience, what is it that you talk about? Uh-oh. Dr. Cindy? You have frozen up, my friend. She's still frozen. By the way, you're listening to Positive Talk Radio on YouTube, and hopefully Dr. Cindy will be able to come back to us real quickly, because she's in Chicago, and in Chicago I know that they have lots of storms and lots of they had flash flooding this morning and stuff. So her internet connection may not be as good as we would like. We shall see. I think she's checked out and is going to check back in and see if we can't improve the connection that she has with Mr. Internet and stuff. But I also wanted to let you know that Positive Talk Radio is on now, going to be on at 3:00 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday, from 3 to 4. And we're going to be live every day, and it's going to be great fun. And Dr. Cindy is not back yet. I'm hoping that she's going to make it back here any second now, because if she may be having internet difficulty. Well, she is having internet difficulties. We shall see what happens in the next couple of moments. Now, after this, we are going to have another show that we will be featuring Michael Knobble, and he has written the book Daddy's Girl, and that's going to be on KKNW as well as YouTube and all the other places. So I really encourage you to stay for that. It's an amazing book about an amazing family that went through some really difficult times, but has come through in a shining way. So I hope that you will stay with us and hang out with us doing that. And for some reason, Dr. Cindy is not able to come back yet, so we may end up cutting this part out a little bit, but we'll see. If you are listening and you would like to chime in with a comment, you're always welcome to do that and to talk to me and stuff. So if you're out there, feel free to get to comment and talk to me. And if you're listening right now, we've got some connection problems with Dr. Cindy. I'm hoping that she is going to be able to come back here in just a second, and stuff. And it is one of those things that happens in live radio from time to time. So it is kind of one of those things. So I'm going to wait patiently and see if she's able to come back and to be involved in the show again, because she's got some really interesting things to say. And we'll be, again, we're talking with Dr. Cindy Howard, and the name of the book is Positively Altered. And it's a new book that's coming out September 12th. It's about all the messy, hard stuff we encounter in life and finding a way forward to unapologetically great attitude. Learn about Cindy's raw in the moment stories about life, death, and all the hilarious hurdles in between. So there again, we are waiting for Dr. Cindy to come back, and we shall wait patiently for a few minutes and see if her internet comes back, or she may have lost it. If she's lost it, her internet, that is, then we will have to have her back on the show at another date and time. And I'm waiting to see if she has... No, she hasn't responded as yet. If you'd like to be the guest here on the show, all you got to do is to comment in the comments and stuff like that. So, Dr. Cindy is doesn't seem to be making it back. I don't know what to tell anybody. We're just going to have to. Okay, we'll wait and see if she is able to make her way back. Wait a minute. Here she is.
That wasn't perfect for overcoming an adversity without a planned moment. I don't know what was.
Well done.
Is that crazy? I don't know what happened. Like, everything's been working all day, and then the internet, I guess, decided to just disconnect us. So I apologize, but I'm back.
Well, no apology needed. It's technology at its finest. And while you were away, I was able to talk about the fact that we are now doing this show 5 days a week at 3 p.m. every Pacific time. And we talked about your book. And fortunately, you came back because I was running out of things to say.
Kevin, this reminds me of when you talk to the kids and they tune out and you just keep going and going and going. And then you finally realize the connection is gone. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, I better reconnect. And you hope they're still paying attention. So thank you for hanging on for me.
Oh, you're more than welcome. I'm glad we were able to make a connection again. I told everybody that you were in Chicago and you've been having some weather there. And so you never know when the internet's going to come or when it's going to go and all that kind of good stuff. So
correct. But you know what? We make do, and that's typical here. So one day it's snowing and the next day it's 80. And then by the end of the day, we have flash flooding. So we learn to adapt here.
Boy, no kidding. you must. Okay. So where were we when we were so sadly interrupted?
Well, you were asking me about the speaking, and I'm not sure where I got cut loose by the internet world, but I think I was getting into the whole keynote message. Was I there?
Yes. You were going to get started there because I mentioned that you're not only an author and your book comes out September 12th and you can pre-order it now, but also that you are a keynote speaker of note and you travel around the country giving. And I just wanted to get a flavor for when you're speaking to people, what do you talk about?
Right. So there's a couple things and we can shift, but mostly it's about how to take something thrown your way that's adverse and making it positive and at the same time change the language. Right. So how do we have some fun when we enter an event that might not be? And we can shift that, whether it's medicine, whether it's sales, whether it's being the most awesome garbage man you could ever be. How do we take those things in our life and turn them around so that we can really learn to enjoy them and find the gifts in them?
How do you, have you ever heard of the concept of a golden handcuffs?
A golden ticket? Golden handcuffs?
Yes.
Uh-oh. Okay, I want to know.
Okay, golden handcuffs are, I was in between my radio days when I was, because I started in 2003, had to get up for a while. I drove a bus for 12 years.
Okay.
And I asked a guy, I don't know if you ever ride a bus, but sometimes you have great bus drivers and other times you have people that look like they're about ready to kill somebody who are driving the bus the whole time.
Sure.
And I asked a guy, I said, why do some bus drivers have such a tough time coming up with a positive attitude? It seems to me it makes their day a lot longer and is no fun. And he looked at me and he said, golden handcuffs. And I said, what does that mean? He said, you make too much money to quit, but to hate the job you're doing.
Oh, no.
And so then, so I was, that's part of the dilemma that we find ourselves in our society is there are lots of people that have, feel like they have golden handcuffs on. Yeah. They can't leave what they're doing. They hate what they're doing, but they can't leave it. And that seems to me to be a waste of life.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I do think part of that is perspective though. You know, there's, it may not be easy to do, but I still think there's a choice in that, right? I mean, there's opportunities, whether it's within the same career path, a different career path, starting over. We can shift a little bit. Maybe we recreate a budget. Maybe we change the outlook. Maybe we decide what's a priority. And we spend way too many days, hours, years of our lives working to really be miserable. So I have this mantra that it's figure out what you love to do and figure out what the world needs and mesh the two together. And when you mesh the two together, your days go by really fun and the money usually follows at that point.
Exactly. And if you can do something that you enjoy doing, I think you do it better. What do you think?
I do. I love what I do. I mean, when I go to work, and I sort of don't even like that word, right? Because it, again, has a negative connotation for a lot of people. It's my happy place. I enjoy walking in. I enjoy helping patients. I enjoy my team that I work with. It's fun. It's really, you know, it's a great activity. And I probably work, I put that in quotes, because again, it's relative, you know, 7 days a week, it's something.
Yeah. Well, if you don't mind my asking, and you don't need to answer this question if you don't want to, but if I were to seek medical assistance, what kind of medical assistance would you provide me?
Well, it depends what you're looking for. So, that is a loaded question, my friend, Kevin. So my background, I'm what's known as a chiropractic internist, which is a pretty unique designation. So I treat any, you know, anything, I should say anybody with any type of musculoskeletal condition, low back pain, headaches, ankle sprains, you name it. I do a lot of acupuncture, but my favorite thing is really on the internal medicine side. So I have a board certification in nutrition and internal medicine. Anything you would see a general practitioner for, I do, but without the use of pharmaceuticals, no surgeries, and I don't deliver babies. Everything else is fair game. So you can come in because you've got a sinus infection, and you can certainly come in for a prostate exam as well if you really want to. So from, you know, head to middle of the body all the way down to toes, there's not too much that I probably haven't seen in my 25 years.
Well, if you've seen a lot of prostates and you haven't seen, you've seen probably way too many.
It's probably true. But, you know, as long as we make sure that patients are healthy, then it's worth seeing them or palpating them, I suppose I should say. That's probably more appropriate. They're hard to visualize from the outside.
They are. I'm sorry. I have this weird sense of humor. And I was just thinking, what's the conversation like when you're about to do a prostate exam for somebody? It's like, are they, I suppose they'd have to be open to it, wouldn't they?
Boy, Kevin, you just open up a whole opportunity for me to respond, you know, maybe not as professionally as I should. But, you know, in sincerity, it really is about communication. It's about educating patients what it is you're about to do and why it's so important to make them as comfortable as they possibly can be in the office.
You know, I had a colonoscopy several years ago.
Uh-huh.
And because they said that I should, and I also had some intestinal problems, and they ended up taking part of my colon. But when I left that and I was talking with the doctor, I said, so here you are, here I am lying on a table with nothing on except a sheet, and the anesthesiologist puts me to sleep. What is the conversation like right after that is what I've always wanted to know. And he said, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. So I'll share with you a funny story. It's actually in the book. I don't know what chapter, so don't ask me. I can't remember. But when I wound up sending myself for a biopsy in order to get properly diagnosed, I wound up having just that conversation with the anesthesiologist. And she proceeded, and I kid you not, I mean, I'm telling the honest to God's truth here. She proceeded to tell me about a gentleman that went in for a lower extremity procedure, and he actually began to masturbate on the table to completion. had no recollection of it whatsoever. So I said to the anesthesia, and so now I'm mortified, right? Because I'm like, is she, you know, like, she giving me a hint that I did something inappropriate? So I said, oh, what did I say? And she says, oh, no, you just kept telling the surgeon not to touch your neck. And I said, oh, thank God I didn't say don't touch my vagina. Because I would have been mortified had that come out of my mouth when I was, you know, not aware of what I was saying. So some of those stories are legit and true and funny, but they do happen.
I can just imagine one nurse saying to the other one, hey, do you got a tissue?
Could be a fly on that wall. Wouldn't that be kind of interesting?
Yes, indeed. I, you know, I'm so glad that you've got a real good sense of humor about this kind of stuff, because it could. I know lots of doctors that they left their sense of humor at the door somewhere, and it's kind of nice to. And your book is also about that, and you talk about life and death and all the hilarious hurdles in between. What is, have you had the? I was going to say, have you had the opportunity to deal with death? That's probably not the appropriate way to say it, but has that been something that has been part of your practice or part of your career is dealing with end of days for people?
Yeah, fortunately for me, we do in the office a lot of preventative work and wellness work. So it's not as common as it potentially could be. But yes, of course. I mean, we see patients for generations and generations, and some come in very sick. And it's really about, again, it's going to bring me back to changing the language. I mean, we all have to go at some point, right? I mean, there is no eternal on, you know, on this earth anyway, right? Eternal life. And it's really about quality and meeting that patient's desires, right? So what is it they're trying to achieve at that stage of their life and what's really important to them? And as a physician, we have to, in my opinion, really hear them in order to meet those needs. And we have to take our goals most of the time out of that equation in order to make them comfortable or prolong their life, or I hate to say this, sometimes even not prolong their life, right? But give them the type of quality that they're looking for, so that those last few days are very meaningful for both them and their family. It's tough. It's really tough, but we have to listen and we have to respond.
You know, if I could seek your medical advice, not that you have to give any, you can say I'm taking the fifth, but my brother died of stage 4 lung cancer. And at one point, he actually passed out on his deck, and they went to the emergency room, and they said, "Well, you've got a tumor in your brain," and so they decided to do brain surgery. But he also had a large tumor in his lung. And it was also part of other, but they didn't address the tumor in his lung or some of the other areas of his body, but they did the brain surgery. I didn't quite understand why they would go through and do that if the core cause wasn't looked at and fixed. Does that make sense?
It does. And first of all, you know, I'm sorry for the loss of your brother. It's interesting, the experiences, and I would love to tell you I could get into that doctor's brain and give you the exact why they do that. But one of the things that I experience with some of my patients walking through some of these journeys is that we don't focus on the entire body in medicine anymore, right? We're very tuned into a certain location or a certain disease or a certain organ, and we do what we feel we're the best at in order to accomplish something, whatever that something is, instead of looking at the entire picture and saying, okay, we've got to take a step backward. How did we get here in the first place? What is potentially increasing the amount of damage or, you know, facilitating this road faster than we want it to go? And how can we A, stop the progression, B, reverse the progression, and C, make the patient the most comfortable? And part of that still comes back to that first statement of, we also need to know what the patient is looking to accomplish, right? And being very honest about that. It's hard because there's standard of care out there in medicine that I don't always feel is the best care. But, you know, between politics and money and insurance and corporations, sometimes we have just these procedures that we follow based on rules instead of gut medical years of intuition and communication with the patient to figure out what's really best. And And that's hard. So, you know, did the lung tumor come first, right? That caused metastasis to the brain? Was it vice versa? Why was there a tumor in the first place? And what road did he go down where we could maybe look and reflectively go, shoot, that, you know, might not have been a good choice, or maybe there's something we can help with to alter that path. But I find a lot of these docs in medicine, unfortunately, and there's a time and a place for them, please don't misunderstand me, but a lot of them really are just so hyper-focused in their little, you know, with their blinders on, right? In their little realm. And therefore, all the other aspects get ignored.
You know, what was interesting about that is that after he had the brain surgery, and the doctor saw him a month or two later, and he said, "How you doing? How you doing? Your brain surgery went really, really well." And he said, "Well, I've got some other issues." And the doc never responded back to him because he went to the primary care and they determined that he was terminal. And so what do you say to a guy that you just did surgery on and they're terminal and stuff? And it was a sad thing because nobody ever said that to him. Nobody ever said, "You're really sick and you are terminal. Mm-hmm. Let's make you as comfortable as we can for as long as you choose to be here."
And that's a tough word. You know, I always use my mother as an example. I lost my mother almost 2 years ago to multiple myeloma and amyloidosis. And when she was first diagnosed, you know, they were looking at about 6 months. Well, my mother made it 8.5 years. And, you know, we're all terminal on some level. And that word, again, I think is a very scary word to plant in somebody's psyche, depending on where they also are. I think we have to be realistic. I think it's okay to be honest and say, "Look, what you have is very serious, right?
Yeah.
Here are the potential outcomes. Here are your choices." In my world, and I know this is going to sound almost a little fairy tale-ish, but I always believe that there's an option until either you really truly run out of them, which I'm not sure we really do if you keep looking, or you choose to run out of them, right? So serious, you know, even statistics bother me a little bit, because if you're the one person that makes it, then it's awesome that you're in that 1%, right? It's the language, I think, that becomes dangerous. But then on the reverse, to your point, being really honest as well in what you're dealing with and addressing everything instead of just going, "Woohoo, we got the one tumor," and ignoring the fact that everything else can be very detrimental. That's really dangerous too in language. And it's unfortunate. It would have been nice for him to have a little bit more, I think, of both, right? That here are some choices. You tell us what you're comfortable pursuing. However, it is still serious and we don't want to ignore what's going on.
I wanted him to have you as his doctor. That's what I want.
And because, I would have loved to have helped,
you know, because you are a very caring, loving person and you want the best for everybody, but you're right. We, all of us have got an expiration date that it's the bottom of our feet. And unfortunately I can't see the bottom of my feet. So I have no idea when that's happening, but it will at one point. And, for me, it's not going to be something I'm going to lament and say, "Oh, you know, I'm going to die." It's going to be, "I'm going home." That's how I view it.
Yeah, I encourage most people, and I think there's a little bit of this mantra in the book too, is it is your body, it is your health, and you really do get to do it your way, whatever that looks like. Don't stop building your tribe and your team and asking, you know, questions and looking for answers if you want them, because there are people out there who think differently, do differently, and are willing to keep working for you. But it really is your choice and you get to do it your way. And I would love to empower people to feel that way about their own health, whether it's something little or something massive.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, at 4 o'clock today, I get to interview a gentleman that's written the book Daddy's Girl. And his daughter had a baby at 27. And they discovered in the course of that she had stage 4 colon cancer. And that but due to circumstances, the right oncologist, the right medical team, the support that she got from her family, the spiritual support that they've got, I had the awesome opportunity of interviewing dad who wrote the book, the daughter who the book was about, and their 17-year-old son.
Oh, that gives me chills. What a great experience.
It really was, because, you know, you think somebody is okay, you're terminal. And you think, well, that's it. Well, in this case, it didn't have to be it. And it wasn't. And mm-hmm. they found the right team to work with her. And she's now cancer free and stuff. So, and it's all part of the plan. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but it at the end of the day, in my world, it doesn't matter. So, and I didn't mean to take this conversation a little dark, but I think the talking about death is as important as talking about life, because goodness knows it's going to happen to all of us.
It is. And there's a beautiful way to do that.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I agree. And I love what hospice can do, and the way that they, because near the end, they brought in a hospital bed and they made sure he had all the, he'd been sober for about 20 years. And so he was scared to start taking, he said, what if I get hooked on the drugs, the painkilling drugs that you're going to give me? And the hospice lady looked at him and said, I don't really think that's a concern at this point.
Right. a little lower on the priority list at that stage, for sure.
Yeah. Exactly. So you are a how long have you been a chiropractor-ish person?
Ish for 25-ish years.
You started when you were 10?
I look amazing for 72, don't I?
You do. It must be the chiropractic along with the nutrition, along with all the things that you talk about and that you preach as well.
You know, so I'll be honest with the audience. I'm 54, so I appreciate the compliment. I'm not quite the 72, but I'll tell you a cute story.
You aren't 54.
I am 54.
No, you're not.
I am. Okay, I'm 72 then. We'll go with the first answer. So it's cute. Both my mother and my grandmother are since passed, but years ago, and I look exactly like my mother and my mother like my grandmother. When my grandmother, you know, was young, she used to tell everybody she was 29, no matter how old she was. Right. And then when my mother turned 29, grandma had to become 39 because it didn't make sense. And then when I turned 29, my mother turned 39 and my grandmother turned 49. And I don't know how old she was, but way older at that point. And one day I said, Grandma. And she was this amazing little lady. I said, Grandma, you have to stop lying to people that you are younger than you are. I said, you look like crap for 49 years old. If you're going to lie, add 20 or 30 years to your life, because then people are going to think you look unbelievable and they're going to want to know what you're doing. If I told you I was 29 years old right now sitting here, people would go, oh, she's not aging quite so well. But 72, unbelievable.
Exactly.
Right. So women get that wrong. I mean, don't lie in the first place, but if you're gonna, at least do it to your advantage.
Exactly. And I really wish that it wasn't that way, that we looked at people's looks and determine their worth based upon, boy, I tell you, at 54, she's looking pretty hot there, or 52 or whatever you are.
Thank you.
Looking pretty hot there, whereas, you know, we should be looking at, as an example, let me give you a really good example, is I can see your energy, I can see your positivity and your smile and the energy that comes about you, and that makes me happy just to be around you.
Oh, thank you. You know what? It's fun, right, when you find people that you resonate with that way, and those are the people. Spend the most time that you can with, because you feed off of that, right? There's nothing worse than walking into a room and just kind of feeling like you've been zapped. And to your point that all that energy is gone and you look around and go, how can I get out of here fast? Right. And you should at that point. But when the energy is good in a room or with an individual, suck that up and surround yourself with people like that, because it does, it heals us to do that.
Do you find that speaking in front of a large group, that it energizes you, or does it weigh upon you?
It is the greatest high I have in my entire life, truly. And I mean that. There is something about that nervous butterfly energy before you walk out onto a stage that, rumor has it, all the really good speakers do. So I'm going to tell you, I'm lumping myself into that category, because I get that little nervous energy. And after those first few words, and you start to feed off the audience or respond to things they say or look people in the eye. And then when you're finished, it's this euphoric feeling of, if one person got something really cool, from three of my words within that time frame, It's a really unique energy exchange with an audience that I get, that I float for hours, if not days, after something like that.
See, and it's the same thing that I do with these podcasts and the radio shows, is that I just really love the concept of you and I are going to be having a conversation. Somebody's going to listen to the piece of that conversation, either now or in the future. We don't know when. It's not our job. It's somebody else's job to determine when that happens. But it's going to mean something. It's going to mean something to them that will, in some cases, change their life.
Mm-hmm. And what's great is somebody might take a listen to this years from now, and then it's the right time for them to hear it then as well. And that's really cool.
Exactly. Well, exactly like your book, which is coming out September 12th. September 12th, it's coming out. Just so everybody knows.
It's pretty soon.
It's day after my birthday. It's coming out on Tuesday.
Oh, happy birthday. We should have moved it a day early so we could celebrate together.
Yeah, I know. Well, see, since for the last 20 years, nobody's really wanted to celebrate much on 9/11.
Well, but see, again, that's the negative vibe, right? Like, why don't we turn that around and find the gifts in all of that horror? We've got to find the gifts and celebrate the good stuff. And your birthday has to be one of those from, you know, this year forward.
Exactly. Well, thank you for that. I really appreciate that. And I really like that attitude, because you make that... that, you know, you could sit here and there are people that will listen or watch what happened on 9/11, 2001, year after year after year, but it's defeating and it's negative. And we've got to get past those things and look at things in a more positive way. Don't you find that it makes people healthier too?
Oh, for sure. You know, if we look at history in such a way, and it can be anything, whether it's 9/11 or, you know, the pandemic we just walked through, or the flu, if anybody is, you know, over 110 years old and lived through that at this point still, you know, there might be a couple people still out there that can say, I, you know, made it through that epidemic. It's what do we learn, right? Because there was nothing good in the event itself, right? I mean, nobody can sit and say that was a good thing. But if we look at the lessons and we look at the history and we can change what we're doing moving forward as a result of something so horrible, then there is something good that comes out of it. And it's those of us that wallow in that I think run down the wrong rabbit hole. If we can acknowledge what it is for what it was, but move forward with the learning that we got from it, now we grow. That's where we grow as humans. And if we don't take those events and get something out of it, we become really very stagnant.
Now, Dr. Cindy, you've written the book Positively Altered. So that means that your life has been a bowl of cherries and roses and puppy dog tails. I'm willing to bet that's not exactly true.
It's not even close to true. So at the time I walked through cancer, my mother was diagnosed and she was given that word terminal, which nobody liked. The dog died of pancreatic cancer and I was walking through an absolutely horrible divorce. So if you want a sob story, I got one for you. You know, it's, I mean, really, I could have written that book too. And instead I thought, no, I'm going to figure out how to make this fun and get through to the other side of it. So I think we all have the sob story at some point. I mean, again, 54 years on this planet, I don't know too many people that haven't had a sob story up until this point in their life.
I call it,
they're coming.
Yeah. I call it my bad country music song period.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, my dad died, my dog died, my wife left, I lost my house. I got sued for $50,000, I declared bankruptcy, I ran a truck into a bridge.
Okay, but there is nothing hotter than a guy in blue jeans with a white shirt and cowboy boots with a guitar singing a bad country song.
That is so true, and I tell that to people, and I say it to be humorous and stuff, but the reality is that had I not gone through everything negative or challenging in my life, I wouldn't be who I am today. And it's important that we understand that and can then work through it.
Yeah. Every moment, every choice up until this one you and I are having right now got us to this moment we are having right now. And I'm actually really having a great time. So thanks, Kevin.
Well, me too. It's because you are truly somebody that is you're still practicing medicine.
I am.
And you're still doing the best you can. And what motivated you to write the book? Was it your life experience in total, or did you wake up one day and said, I really need to write a book?
So I'm going to give you the cliche answer first. And that is, you know, if one person reads it and it changes their life, then it was worth writing, right? That's the typical author answer when you publish. The real answer, I think, is it goes a little bit deeper. So these were actually journal entries, is how it started out when I walked through the experience. Actual entries, real time, when things were happening to me. And it then became a venue where I took these little mini chapters and tried to make some of them humorous. And then I took some of the chapters, and some of them are actually a little sad, and some are a little disturbing. And some are like, she did what? You know, you might have some of those moments through it too. And it became this mantra for me of how it's okay to walk through life not doing what they, I don't know who they are, by the way, we learned about them in school, but not doing what they tell you to do, right? Or what's expected of you from your friends or your family members or professionals or whatever it is. It's really about, I want to walk through my life, my journey, not apologizing for who I am, what I choose, what I say, what I do. Of course, not meaning to intentionally hurt anybody or offend anybody. There's appropriate times for apologies, but it really became more of this mantra for people who kind of sit on this fence of, I'm a little nervous to do this path the way I want to do it because everybody's telling me I should say something different. And I really want to inspire those people to go, nope, no, I'm not going to listen to those voices. I'm going to dive deep into myself and run the path and the course the way I want to. So it became more of a mantra than just a book to change one person's life.
It became important. And it's important for other people to read, but more importantly, it's important for your growth to go through that experience, because that was a very important experience for you to have.
It was. And what's really awesome for me is what I didn't realize is as much as I grew through that, and I am so great, and I don't ever want to do it again, but I am so grateful for the experience. I would not take it back. I have zero regrets walking through that. Now that I've chosen to publish the book and spend the money and meet people and walk this new journey, it's actually been equally cool to learn new things about myself as I do this as well, because this is uncharted territory for me. It's a brand new experience and I'm growing all over again. So I get to continue that for myself, even if nobody picks up the book, which you should. Okay, let me take that back. That's not right for me to tell you you should. I'd love for you to pick up the book. See, we even have to keep ourselves in check sometimes with our messages. You know, I don't like to tell people what they should do, but I would love for you to do that. It's just opening more doors for me for personal growth.
And that will continue on, because I'm a little older than you and you're just a puppy. So, you've got 30 years of spiritual and emotional growth, let me ask you this. I was going to put a statement, but I'll ask a question instead. On your last day on earth, 40 years from now, 50 years from now, what do you want people to say?
You know what? It's a great question. The only people that I want to say anything are my family that are going to be in the room with me. And I just want to hear, I love you.
What will you say?
I love you back. Yourself?
That's the best answer I've ever gotten.
Oh, thank you.
That's really cool, because a lot of, you know, so many of us don't think in terms of looking back on that day when it's our time to go. And we don't think until that day. If you talk to a lot of people that are in hospice, they'll say that people express regret. That's the number one thing that they do when they're on their deathbed. I wish I would have. I wish I did. And all this kind of. And if you can get to the end of your days and not express any regret, then you've won.
You have won. And I think that comes down to living your true life. It's interesting, in the book I talk about, I only have one regret in life, just one. And I look at it that way from the standpoint of what we talked about is getting to this moment, that if I truly regretted a lot of the things that I did, I wouldn't be sitting here with you.
Correct.
the one regret is interesting. I always wanted to go to New York and become a professional dancer. And I love my father, but I got into New York University on a dance program and I didn't get in academically. And he said, I am not paying for a dance certificate and not a degree. And I said, oh, okay. And I didn't go. And I should have said, I'll go waitress and I'll go do it myself. And I'll go starve to death on the streets of New York and, you know, play that game. And it's truly my only one regret because it was something I actually really, really wanted to do with my life. But that one regret also taught me something. So really at my end day, whether it's tomorrow or when I always joke I'm 112, which I hope it is, I don't believe I'm going to have any regrets. I just want to be surrounded with the people that mean the most to me and be able to share that back. Because I don't, when we look at some of our decisions regretfully, that's the negative connotation again that I'm trying so hard in my life to steer away from. And exactly. it's a negative word.
It is. And besides, it's counterproductive. Because it is. The reality is every experience that we have in life, in my humble opinion, we planned our life before we came here. We have people on the other side assisting us, and they are helping us get to where we say we want to go. And sometimes it can be a little messy. As a matter of fact, in your book, it says, positively altered is about all the messy, hard stuff we encounter in life. And a lot of that can be by our own doing or by other people. But it's all part of our own grand plan for who we choose to be if we allow it to happen.
Correct.
And so many of us say, nah, I'm not going to do that. I can't do that. My mom says I can't do that, so I can't do that. My dad says he'll disown me. I can't do that. So you know what I mean?
Can't is one of my least favorite words. When my children say I can't do that, I say you can. You're just choosing not to.
Perfect. And then they say, oh, mom.
Yes. Yes. And they go back to their video games, right? You know? You know, sometimes the advice falls on deaf ears, but you know, one day they may bring that back. You never know.
Well, my kids are in their 30s and they still say, oh, dad, because I'll say something like, they'll say, well, what's your opinion? And I'll give them a positive opinion. They'll say, well, that's all you ever say. And I said, well, I have positive talk radio. What the hell do you expect me to say? That's the way it goes, you know, and you can do, it is amazing to me that what you can accomplish in life if you choose to, mm-hmm. And believe in yourself.
Yeah. And there's always a choice. It's always a choice.
Yeah.
And here's the cool thing. If you choose wrong, we get to wake up tomorrow and fix it.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like what I call the 50,000 foot view. Which is the 50,000 foot view is we get to see, we're on the ground level and we're in the forest and we get to see the tree in front of us and the tree behind us. And there's an entity on the other side that gets a 50,000 foot view. It sees where we've been. It sees where we're going and it guides us and helps us along the way. And when we start walking in the wrong direction, we get nudged back a little bit. If you listen, do you agree with that?
I do. And you said something so key. I think we really need to listen. It's such a hectic, crazy world that I think we plow through so fast and we don't actually stop to hear, to do that self-reflection of where are we? Where do we want to be? Are we on the right path? And to sit in the quiet with ourselves to truly listen so that we can make those shifts when it's appropriate.
I had a friend of mine, and I would use that. He said, well, how do I listen better? And I said, well, first of all, understand that you've got one mouth and two ears. And he said, I've never heard that before. And he said, because you're talking all the time, you don't listen. So just shut up and listen for a moment, would you please? Because listening is an art form that many of us have lost or never had. But you can learn who other people are by listening to them.
Mm-hmm. And the reflection of that too, to understand.
Yes.
Right.
Well, it's easier to, if you are listening and you don't understand what somebody's telling you, it's easier to say, could you repeat that? I don't quite get that. I don't understand it. But if you just aren't paying attention and just let it go, then you'll never get the answers that you need.
Right. It's very true. And that's part of the busy of the world we live in that people get wrapped up in.
I'm so glad that I'm, you know, my grandmother said when she was, and this goes back to when JFK was president and it was in the 60s and she was older and she said, boy, I'm so glad I'm on my way out rather than coming in. It's tough out there.
I think so, we all say that with every generation, right? So. Our parents said it. We're saying it to our kids. Our kids are going to say it to their kids. It's, you know, it's the passage of time that does that to all of us.
By the way, you are awesome. Will you come back on and talk to me again?
I would love to come back. I'll talk to you on the show. I'll talk to you off the show, whatever you want to do.
We can talk about my colon. No, we don't want to talk.
We can talk about your colon and your prostate. Whatever. Again, I'm open.
No, that would mean that I would be open, and that's not, no, never mind.
You're correct. I misspoke. You would be open.
Not a chance. By the way,
we'll stick with the colon.
Exactly. Well, and we've been talking with Cindy M. Howard, and get her book Positively Altered. It's coming out September 12th. Did you hear me? September 12th. It's coming out. So you need to go, and you can go to your website right now and pre-order it, from what I understand.
Right. You can go directly to Amazon and just type in Dr. Cindy Howard and Positively Altered, or you can go to drcindyspeaks.com and pre-order it through my website. And you can also sign up for my newsletter if you would like to see what's going on with me or my dog or my kids or my life or my book. We won't bombard you every day with emails, but we'll keep you in the loop, and we'd love to welcome you to the family.
What kind of dog do you have?
Oh, I have a English Mastiff Great Dane.
Holy mackerel.
Yeah. Do you guys want to see him? Should I show you him? Hold on.
Sure.
Let's see. Let's see if I can do this without, you know, losing connection. Hold on. Let's see.
Holy, that thing takes up your whole bed.
I'm actually sitting in my daughter's room doing this rather than my office. And that is the exact position he is in. Anytime I am in the house all day long. That's it. That's all he does. That's Walter.
What a great name for a dog.
Oh, he's a good boy. He's just a lazy boy.
And he's a lazy boy who poops big.
It is giant poop that it is. Yes.
Well, it's easy to find. It's not necessarily easy to pick up.
Correct.
But Dr. Cindy has been our guest. Go to drcindyspeaks.com. She would make a wonderful keynote speaker for your group. So go book her to do that. Get her book Positively Altered. Before we go, I have to ask you, I'm going to shut up for a moment and allow you to tell our audience anything that you would like them to know.
Oh, you're sweet, Kevin. First of all, thank you so much for everybody hanging with us today. This has been absolutely my pleasure and my treat. Here's what I'd love to leave with everybody. Find your tribe, build your tribe, get your peeps, walk through adversity, welcome it. It's going to come absolutely no matter what you do. Please make it fun and don't apologize for how you walk through it. And if you want, share your journey with me. I'd love to hear about it.
Thank you so much. That is, you've rehearsed that. You've said that before.
Twice.
So I hope you've enjoyed this little presentation and this little podcast. I have enjoyed doing it.
I've had a great time, Kevin. Thank you.
Then what? Thank you. And if you wait right there, I'll be right back.
Sounds great.
Hey, thanks for enjoying this episode all the way to the end. Please give us a like and subscribe to this channel. This has been a production of PositiveTalkRadio.net. Please visit our website, oddly named PositiveTalkRadio.net, for more details about us and our mission, which is to provide great positive programming designed to inspire us all. I'm Kevin McDonald, and I'm proud of these shows, and I truly hope that you'll like them and share them with friends and family. So on behalf of our entire team, remember, be kind to one another, because each other's all we got.